with a high temperature of 86 degrees, a low temperature of 60 degrees.
Adam Lapp!
The best part of waking up, it's the doo-wop, doo-wop in all I do. The mountain goat aroma always coming through, always coming through. Oh, the best part of waking up is Folgers in your cup. Now I'm right in harmony with that doo-wop, doo-wop ditty. Whoa, one more cup and it's a hoo-wop, shoo-wop for me. Oh, the best part of waking up. Folgers in your cup. The best part of waking up is Folgers in your cup.
Logan, now there's a cool little ditty, but I might take issue with that.
Yes, thank you very much, Adam. It's nice when I talk to myself on the air sometimes, but that's part of the magic of being in radio. You can go ahead and tell yourself to stop talking because we're going to go live on the air right now. The best part of waking up is actually listening to WWGH Radio. Wouldn't you agree, Logan?
Oh, I'd agree for sure.
Is there anything better than making a nice 24-ounce cup of coffee that I devoured last hour and talking about the issues of the day, be it politics or technology or what have you?
No, it's an amazing, it's no better way to start the morning.
I certainly would agree. You are tuned to Mid-Morning Coffee Break with Adam. With me, Adam Lepp, also known as the Computer Guy. Hopefully you enjoyed the show last hour. Logan H. from Mid-Ohio. He's a native of Newark, also known as Newark. Currently living in north end of Columbus. He is joined on the air with me discussing the issues of the day. On the phone with me is our resident political commentator, Dr. Ronald Fineman, live from his domicile in Boca Raton, Florida. Ron, as often seems to be the case, after we talk, kind of talk about the show topics for the next day, the President Donald has done some things, or there have been some world events that we need to address, not just to let people know what is happening in the great world around us, but what the repercussions might be. Tell us briefly, before we talk about some more general topics, tell us briefly about what's going on in Venezuela.
Yeah, first of all, thank you very much, Adam, for inviting me on your show again. I saw on Daily Beast that, of course, there's disruptions and troubles in Venezuela. I'm not claiming there aren't problems there. But apparently there's indications that Trump right now, supposedly he's speaking right now at the UN, so I don't know what he's saying because I can't do two things at once. But apparently he's talking about the need to take action against Venezuela. And, of course, he's seemingly moving toward ending the Iran deal and also, of course, the problem of North Korea. And this all reminds me of Dwight D. Eisenhower, President Eisenhower's farewell address on January 17th, 1961, in which he warned of the military-industrial complex taking us into foreign wars, which would be against our interests. And, of course, we went deeply into Vietnam, and then, of course, we got involved in Iraq and also in Afghanistan, and we did not win any of those wars, and it cost a lot of treasure and also, you know, young men and women killed and wounded, and many with mental problems since their service. And it's the kind of thing where it makes you think, what would Eisenhower think if he was alive today at what Donald Trump seems to be doing, getting us involved in military actions all over the world, along with the ISIS problem and, of course, Afghanistan as well.
Another news story, Ron, that I'm sure you've heard about is the Graham-Cassidy bill designed to overhaul Obamacare. Any thoughts about that? What will eventually happen with
Well, I don't think it should be overhauled. I think the answer is to make Obamacare better. But I am disturbed that Senator McCain seems to be possibly willing to support this bill when he didn't support the earlier one. And from what I've gathered, this bill is worse. So it makes me wonder about McCain's mental state as he's fighting cancer. Does he really know what he's doing? Does he really want to go down at the end of his life that he's backing this this bill that I don't think passed, but would certainly devastate Medicaid and would undermine millions of people who have Obamacare. I've always said you make it better, you improve upon it, as we improve on everything over time. We don't just destroy it. And yet it looks like they're trying one last time, the Republicans, to do this, but they have to do it by next week, by the end of September, and hopefully that will not happen.
You are listening to Mid-Morning Coffee Break with Adam, hosted by yours truly, Adam Lepp. Adam at WWGH1071.com. We have two guests on the air with me today. How about that for coolness? In studio is Logan H., fellow computer tech and geek, and someone who is not shy, like myself, to like myself, not shy, to provide maybe some political commentary and food for thought for you, the valued listener. Feel free to leave a message on our Facebook page, WWGH 107.1, or if you're a Facebook friend of mine, send me a message or a comment, and I'll be happy to address it with you. We discuss the issues of the day. On the line with me is a good friend of mine in the station, Dr. Ronald Feynman, historian, political scientist in Boca Raton, Florida, also teaches part-time. Ron, after the hurricane, your classes are back in session this Friday after 2 weeks off.
That's correct, and hopefully they will not be canceled next week, but this storm, Hurricane Maria, is now threatening the destruction of Puerto Rico, my God, and of course doing even more damage to the U.S. Virgin Islands, and that's just horrifying. And my department chair, her parents live in Puerto Rico, so I'm really concerned and worried for them. And it seems like it's going to pass us by, but, you know, with these hurricanes, it could suddenly take a turn to what I guess we call the left. Right now it looks like it's going to be east of the Bahamas, but just the thought that it could happen again is just horrifying, and I just hope everything will be normal, but it's not going to be good for Puerto Rico or the U.S. Virgin Islands, and we're going to have to spend a lot of money in order to rebuild these places because they are our territory, and we need to spend whatever needs to be spent.
But all these experts in Washington say there's no climate change. So how do we explain that?
Well, of course there's no climate change because Donald Trump doesn't believe in it. But then Donald Trump doesn't understand science, and he doesn't understand or have knowledge of history. These are his major weaknesses as far as knowledge. Plus, he cannot spell correctly, as we see on Twitter. It happens so often. It's not just once in a while where it's a typo. I don't think he knows how to spell. It's really terrible how ignorant our president is, as I see it.
He spells wiretap T-A-P-P. Now, I'm thinking maybe that's in deference to me because my last name is spelled with two P's at the end. Maybe he secretly is saying that he likes Adam, that he thinks Adam is a great talk show host, and he invites opinions.
Are you sure that it isn't L-E-P and you thought it's P-P? Oh, gosh.
It's possible. You never quite know. I can be a man of mystery.
And that brings up the whole thing about Trump, about the so-called, tape or stuff about Russia when he was in Russia, about whether that's going to be revealed to be true, that whole so-called P-tape.
I do have Logan H. in the studio with me, a scientist of sorts. Logan, we didn't discuss this much, so I thought I would just ask you an off-the-cuff question.
Ooh, putting me on the spot.
Oh, that's the fun of radio, is you never quite
Adam
know.
Loves to put people on the spot. I know that as a veteran of this station.
What do you think about President Donald and his cabinet and their scientific knowledge? Did they skip science class in school, or are they all a bunch of PhDs?
Mm-hmm. So there's several parts to this. Thanks for asking me this, actually. So I became politically aware under George W. Bush. That was I'm 30. This is kind of how it worked out. I was a little bit aware of Clinton, but George W. Bush, even though I disagreed with some of his politics, I disagreed with some of his policies. For one, the stem cell research, I mean, I believe that set us back by 10 years. But regardless of all that, with George W. Bush, I never felt that he, and at least his cabinet, was so incompetent as to steer our country down a path that would take us probably a president or two to recover from. That's kind of how I feel about Trump. It's one thing to disagree with his policies. It's another to question his very competency, or at least, at the very least, question the people he puts in place who should be competent for him. So I don't think he's doing a very good job, period. I don't think he will want to do a good job. I don't believe he'll have good people in place to want to do a good job either. It is going to be a crap show from here on out.
That's a great comment, Logan. And I have to say, looking at the people around him, I think the one person that I would say at this point looks solid and looks substantial is Nikki Haley, the UN ambassador. Mm. She really comes across well. And I have a feeling when Rex Tillerson leaves as Secretary of State, which supposedly is going to happen early next year, I could see if he's still around in office, or even the next president, whoever he is. And I say whoever he is because now there's questions about Mike Pence. I think Nikki Haley is someone to watch, and she is, I think, someone to admire.
Let me ask both of my guests, the in-studio one, Mr. H, and of course, Dr. Ron. Do you agree with me that someone in a scientific position at the cabinet, the EPA director, for example, should have some kind of education or aptitude in science? Should that be required? Should you have to have at least a bachelor's degree in the scientific field? What are your thoughts? Let me ask Ron
Absolutely,
first.
I think so. And Scott Pruitt is a disaster. He should never have been made EPA administrator. He wants to destroy EPA. And same with the Department of Energy. I don't think that former governor of Texas should be the one in charge of that. Rick Perry, he did very poorly in science classes, I've read, and he really is not qualified or competent to be Secretary of Energy.
What do you think, Logan? Should a scientific cabinet member like the EPA director, should he or she have at least a bachelor's degree from an accredited university, or what should be the requirements?
So at the very least, there should be some credential for the person who's overseeing major policy decisions in one of the most powerful countries in the entire world. I also believe the same thing for committees, and in general, I believe there should be more technocracy in our democracy, and we really should be putting people who are competent in a particular area, so if they decide they want to agree or disagree with the current scientific consensus, they would be rightly laughed out of D.C.
Technocracy, is that a made-up word? Or
no, it generally means you put the people who are competent in areas of control, so a scientist would be in making scientific policies, and what have you.
It's like edutainment or infotainment, one of those compound words.
Could be, yeah.
You're listening to Mid-Morning Coffee Break with Adam. That's me, Adam Lepp, the computer guy, the political commentator, and all-around interesting individual on The Talking Place, WWGH Radio, 107.1 on your FM dial, broadcasting online via our website at WWGH1071.com. And if you have a mobile device, doesn't have to be one of those $999 Apple iPhone Xs or whatever they're called with the extremely expensive price. Any smartphone, download the free TuneIn app and search for WWGH, and you can listen, voila, by clicking the little triangle thingy at your leisure. Or is that leisure? I've in studio.
Adam, I wanted to add something to what Logan said.
Sure.
Not only should we have people who are qualified in science and have degrees and knowledge in that to be the head of administration, or cabinet positions, but also in the Senate, we have James Inhofe of Oklahoma, who is like 81, 82, and does not believe in global warming, and he's the head of the Senate Environment Committee.
Oh, it's a travesty.
And that is insane. I mean, of course, he is of the majority party. He has a seniority, but that's a disgrace that he should be in charge of that. He should actually be retired. He should not be in the Senate with his backward view on the issue of the environment.
So the rocking chair might be a better place for this gentleman then.
Well, that'd be generous. I'm not sure I'd even give him a rocking chair.
Talking with Dr. Ronald Feynman from his domicile in beautiful, sunny, and I'm sure much warmer than it is here, southeastern Florida, along with my in-studio guest.
Yes, it is warmer, as usual.
Ron, I know Logan had some questions he wanted to ask you about. I mentioned what an authority you are on presidents and U.S. history, and he wanted to maybe tickle your brain a couple times. Mm-hmm. Go ahead and start tickling, Logan.
Oh, thank you, Adam. So it's not every day I get to talk with a presidential scholar. So I did have a question. My question is regarding to how you measuring presidents. And the way I want to get your opinion is this. One metric I'm interested in is the petty reason you might judge a president. So, and when I'm talking about the presidential decorum, how they handle themselves, how they appear, how presidential do they act? And so I have a question for you. With that metric in mind, who was the most presidential president in terms of decorum, and who's the worst?
Wow, that's quite a question. C-SPAN, of course, has a group of characteristics they use when they ask like 80, 90, 100 scholars to come up with conclusions on greatness. The greatest. It's hard to say there's a greatest, but I would say it's hard to judge presidents before the age of radio and television because we only have news reports about them. So we can't see Abraham Lincoln. We have photographs, but we can't hear him and all that. But I think Lincoln comes across as presidential. But again, it's different in the age of radio and television. So it's only really since really Teddy Roosevelt on that we can do that. I would say that a president such as Franklin D. Roosevelt stands high on the list. I would also say that a president such as John F. Kennedy stands very high, and I would say, as far as coming across well as a presidential type, is Ronald Reagan, and I would say Barack Obama. But I couldn't really pick who's the greatest. Now, the worst. Well, I mean, there's quite a few mediocre presidents, I think, and poor, but I would say I really think Donald Trump is the least presidential of all. But if you ask other than Donald Trump, I think I would probably say, let me think about this for a minute, I would probably say Warren G. Harding, probably in the early 1920s, which ironically your station is named after him. But he was quite a disaster as a president, and it was sad that he died in office, but years later we looked back and we said, it was probably a blessing, believe it or not, because he was presiding over horrible scandals, not his own making in the sense that he was involved, like Nixon, but still involved in scandals, the most scandalous since Grant and until Nixon. And he really was not qualified for the office, I don't think.
But doesn't Donald Trump think he is the most presidential, at least after Lincoln?
Well, yes, and he also admires Andrew Jackson, who is important, but is not someone in many ways to be admired. I don't think he has very good judgment of what it is to be presidential, and no president should be telling us he's presidential. That's up to outsiders, us, the people, and the experts to decide that.
And, of course, Warren G. Harding was a newspaper man here in Marion, founder of the Marion Star. So
yes.
I wonder if Donald Trump thinks that he was part of that fake media. Wasn't sure what he thought about, what he would think about that.
I think Donald Trump has delusions of grandeur, to say the least.
Anything else you'd like to talk to Dr. Feynman about, Logan?
Yeah, I do have kind of another question, or really I just want to get his thoughts on this. So obviously, you know, I'm not a fan of Trump, but I'm a fan of history. I'm not a presidential scholar. In my opinion, I do think it was amazing that he was able to essentially usurp his own party. He was able to put his own platform over top of whatever the Republican Party may have had. He kind of just added his own on top of that. Now, in my opinion, I'm not a scholar, but I don't think we've seen something quite like this since as far back as Teddy Roosevelt and the Bull Moose Party. Am I wrong? Have we seen a similar event in modern history, or how far back do we have to go to find a similar thing in history that Trump is doing now?
There is no one that matches Trump since Teddy Roosevelt, but I don't like to really compare him to Teddy Roosevelt. Teddy Roosevelt was running as an independent third-party candidate mm-hmm. after he was president, coming mm-hmm. back 4 years later in 1912, and ending up second rather than third, which all third parties have done. But I do agree that he's been underestimated, underrated. And I saw somebody make a comment yesterday somewhere on radio, or maybe it was TV on cable, that said, in theory, Trump could say, go to hell to the, you saw like is already, to the Republican Party mm-hmm. and to the Democrats, form his own party, become a third party, and run as an independent candidate in 2020. And as pointed out, and it made me really feel, oh my God, please God, don't do this. He could, in theory, if he won 40% of the vote in a three-way race, if he could win the right places in the Electoral College, he could be elected with less percentage, with a smaller percentage of the vote than the 46% he won in 2016. It is actually possible that he could mm-hmm. if the people in the right places, you know, agree to put him first out of three. He doesn't have to win 50% or anywhere near it. He just has to win more than either of his opponents to yeah. win the electoral votes of the state. So I am concerned that he actually could have a chance, unless he's removed from office otherwise, which I still think he will be, to have a shot at winning a three-party race and actually being a third-party candidate winning the election for the first time in American history. The potential was there.
Hmm. And he threatened to do that. Like the last election cycle, he threatened to do just that, drop out and run under a third party. He scared the Republicans pantsless.
Yes, and he could destroy both parties by what he's doing, at least on a short-term basis. Both parties, as has been said, are in, quote, civil war, end quote, between the leftists, Sanders people and the mm-hmm. Clinton people in the Democratic Party, and then the so-called Kasich moderate conservatives group and the far right, the Freedom Caucus in the House. So, I mean, we could be seeing possibly the dissolution of our party system that has been with us since 1854. It's actually possible. We might have a new party system, and Trump could be a, quote, a revolutionary, end quote, leader in that respect if he is not able to be taken out of office. But I think the Mueller investigation shows that he will be out of office at some point in the next year, in the spring of next year. I still believe that will happen. But anything is possible in politics, as we've learned. So the thought of him running as a third-party candidate and winning is horrifying.
Excellent. I did have.
Thank you very much for your questions. They're very insightful.
No, thank you. I did have kind of another one or more of a comment, or I want to get your opinion on it. And a lot of my friends are saying that all this investigation is going nowhere. It means nothing. Obviously, they're equating a lack of publicly available evidence as nothing happening. But this is my opinion, in that a lot of the people who are working with Mueller, they are people who have million-dollar positions that they've left their very, very cushy jobs just to be a part of what Mueller is doing. So I believe you don't give up a place in your career that you could coast on for the rest of your natural life if it wasn't going to be greater than the job you have currently. So they're prepping for something big, in my opinion.
I absolutely agree with you. These lawyers are the top-notch lawyers, and they are doing things that we don't know about, because you can't leak these things out to, you know, in the same way that the Trump White House has leaks. But I think we're going to have a bombshell around Thanksgiving or before, and I think there's a lot of people around Trump, including himself, that are going to be seen as involved in Russian collusion, obstruction of justice, abuse of power. The emoluments clause definitely has been broken from day one on him making money on his properties, including the hotel right across from the White House that he owns. And I also think the pardoning power, the way he used the pardoning power, while he has the right to do that, the way he's done with Arpaio, I think is really going to be not as big an issue, but I think these are all factors that will lead to, I think, action against him and pressure for him to resign once we have these tapes that we hear that have been done, you know, that we learn what he's been saying and what other people have been saying. I think it's going to be like another Watergate, but a much more massive Watergate. And I think he will not be able to survive. But he might very well start a third party outside of that, and, you know, because he could theoretically run, even if he's removed, he could run again in 2020 from the outside, unless he's, of course, in prison, which I assume he would not be. So it's a very tumultuous time we're in.
Well, if Martha Stewart could go to prison, you never quite know who might be wearing the black and white stripes. Sometimes truth is stranger than fiction, my friends. Anyway, Ron, Hillary Clinton has been in the news for a couple different events, the first one being the golf ball incident. Any opinions about the golf ball video?
It's disgraceful, and it's also misogynistic, but it's just this is not presidential behavior. Nobody else. Nixon would never have done anything like this. Again, Nixon up in heaven, I'm assuming he's in heaven, others would think he isn't, is saying, how does he get away with all this? And I think every president, you know, I have a portrait of all the presidents standing in front of the White House, you know, a picture I bought of every president in front of the White House. And I'm thinking this whole group of 43 people are saying, what is wrong with this guy? He's disgracing the office we all held. It's just horrible what's going on. And it's going to do a lot of damage long term to the institution of the presidency. And that is very sad, because I really treasure that office.
Also, in an interview that Hillary Clinton did on NPR yesterday, she said she would not rule out questioning the legitimacy of last year's election if Russian interference is deeper than currently known. Ron, you write a blog called theprogressiveprofessor.com, and you talked about this. Is this really possible? Could we literally have Hillary Clinton contest the election successfully? Is that even possible?
It's unprecedented. I haven't actually commented on that specifically yet. It's unprecedented. I don't think that there's any way to change the election results. But honestly, we need to make sure this kind of thing does not happen again. And there's every possibility the Russians will continue to do this in the future, whether it's with Trump or somebody else. And I do think the Republican Party has been, some of them, has been colluding, not just the administration. There was that discussion last year where Kevin McCarthy, the House Majority Leader, was commenting about Russia and in a public sphere. And Ryan said, shh. You know, and it makes me wonder, what does Paul Ryan know about all this? Could the Republican Party have been getting help from the Russians to help undermine the Democrats, even for congressional races? And that's why I really think, you know, that Mike Pence is under suspicion now, and I think Speaker Ryan might be, and he might not even be there in the future, because the House Freedom Caucus wants to get rid of him. And I'm starting to think, could it go to Senate President Pro Tempore Orrin Hatch, 83 years of age, from Utah, Mormon, and 41 years in the Senate, one of the longest-serving senators? Could Senator Hatch end up in the White House before the term ends? I think it's very possible. But I don't see Hillary Clinton being able to be in office. No.
NPR's Terry Gross asked Hillary directly during the interview, which again was yesterday on NPR, whether she would quote, completely rule out questioning the legitimacy of this election if we learn that the Russian interference in the election is even deeper than we know now. And she said, no, I would not. No, I wouldn't rule it out. So does Hillary have something up her sleeve, Ron, or what do you make out of that?
She could mount a legal challenge, but I really don't think we're going to have her declared the winner or have another election. This is not part of our Constitution and our history, so I don't think there's any way to reverse that. Somebody in the Republican Party will be president throughout this term. I understand how she feels, but I don't think it's possible to actually accomplish that because there's no legal situation that allows that. It would be playing by your ear, as they say, rather than going by constitutional history. So I don't think there's any way that could happen, no.
Talking to Dr. Ron Fineman, good friend of mine, and the radio station presidential and historical scholar. On the phone from Florida and in studio, we have Logan H., my special guest today for the four shows that I'm going to be on. My vocal cords are definitely getting a workout. Ron, you are the author of two books that have been quite popular. One that came out a couple of years ago is now in paperback. Tell us about the book about presidential assassinations. Kind of recapitulate it a bit for our listeners.
Okay, the book came out. What happened is I've done lectures on presidential history and presidential assassinations and other issues for years. And in 2013, I was doing some lectures on presidential assassinations. And suddenly, out of the blue, Roman Littlefield, the publisher who asked me to write a book, who I was aware of, I knew who they were, but I'd never had contact with them, wrote to me at my professional email and asked me or said to me, they noticed I'm doing lectures on this topic, would you like to write a book? And since I'm retired and, quote, only teach part-time now, I couldn't have done it earlier, but it would have been too busy, I thought about it and I said, well, why not? You know, it's flattering that I was asked. So therefore, I agreed and we signed the contract and I spent a year doing the research and the writing and then, of course, all kinds of editing and other work. So it took 2 years. And in August 2015, it came out in hardcover. It's gotten good reviews overall. And it sold enough that in March 2017, it was put into paperback. And I've had a lot of interviews, not only at your station, but elsewhere. And I was on C-SPAN with Brian Lamb right after it came out, and our interview with him on Q&A, which was a real honor. That is really prestigious to get on Q&A on C-SPAN, Brian Lamb. And indeed, I've done a number of book signings, not big numbers like Hillary Clinton or others get, but I've had book signings or presentations about the book at several Barnes & Nobles in South Florida. And I've enjoyed the whole experience, and it's given me the opportunity to be on your station, for instance, and to also get the chance to be able to write on History News Network, which I've now written or published 71 articles, and 10 of them have also been picked up either by Newsweek or Time as well. So it's had great rewards coming out of this book beyond the satisfaction about the book itself.
You had an article picked up on Newsweek.com just this week, actually.
Yes, actually, on Sunday, I published an HNN, and overnight, Newsweek yesterday picked up the article comparing Donald Trump to George Wallace, who, of course, ran for president in 1968 and, of course, got the second-best third-party performance ever with 5 states and 46 electoral votes, only behind Theodore Roosevelt, the progressive Boom Boos Party, 1912, 6 states and 88 electoral votes. Of course, I make the comparison of the tactics used by Wallace, which are quite despicable, and compare them to Trump, but make it clear that Trump is far worse than Wallace. And also, of course, the difference is Wallace did not win, while Trump did win.
One thing I wanted to ask you, Ron, I brought this up yesterday. 99% of the reviews of your book are glowing, which is great. People love the book, that it's interesting, even if they aren't big. Hold on 1 second, please. I have to answer my technology. 1 quick second. Even if they're not big historical fans, they just found the book interesting and learned stuff they didn't know even existed. But like anything, you can't make everybody happy. And so one review.
Well, look, if somebody gets 98% of the vote, that's pretty much a big victory,
oh,
right?
Yeah, no question. One review, though, again, a negative review. I mean, not super negative. Just wanted to ask you about it because you're the expert. Said, I was considering the book for a college course that I'm developing on presidential assassinations. with a particular focus on the Kennedy assassination. However, since the author doesn't even get the official Warren Commission version right, I'm not sure I can trust his scholarship on the other events. Now, is this gentleman correct? Is he just jealous because he's also in the education business like you? I wasn't sure how to take it.
Well, I don't know who this gentleman is, and I didn't react to it. I mean, I'm not going to do that. But as far as I'm concerned, I feel I did cover it adequately. And, of course, it's a book that has chapters on every president who has faced assassination attempts or more, and three presidential candidates, George Wallace, Robert Kennedy, and Huey Long. So it's not as if it's a whole book just on the Kennedy assassination. There's one chapter. I think it's the longest chapter, along with the Lincoln chapter is quite long. But as far as I could see, and nobody else has made that complaint, I think it's just, you know, people see things differently, and I just accept that he was unhappy. I'm sorry about that, because if he had used the book, it would have been very helpful having sale of books, but, you know, to his course, to his classes. But I don't feel that I misrepresented the whole story of the Warren Commission.
So maybe this person needs to maybe learn more about this particular aspect of history.
And again, this is a book on all assassination threats. It's not only focused on Kennedy. It's not a detailed book on Kennedy. So within the limits of a chapter, I mean, I think I handled it well. But of course, I guess if one is going to do a book, and there's plenty of them on the Kennedy assassination, there may be more development of some points than I could do in a chapter.
Right. And I think one detractor out of dozens of very positive reviews. It's not a big deal. And
well, I'm very pleased, you know, and of course, everybody wants to have everybody love them, as they say, but as in politics, as in romance, as in everything, you can't win them all, you know, but as long as you're doing well enough. And I want to point out with History News Network, I've published 71 articles, and I was joking with the editor there because I had some articles over the last couple of years that have not been accepted, and I think it's like 9 or 10 maybe have not. But I joked and I said, wow, 71 out of 80, that's like an .875 batting average. That's pretty good. And he wrote back saying you should try for the Yankees and laughed.
Maybe the Reds could use your services, quite possibly.
I don't think the Indians need my help. They're doing well with 22 straight wins. They finally lost, but they set an American League record. But, I mean, let's face it, if you can get .875 batting average of acceptance of articles sent, that's certainly amazing. I'm shocked myself about that.
Yeah, I'm quite impressed by our local team here, the Tribe, in the great Buckeye State. An incredible run. It's been a pretty good year or two for Cleveland between LeBron and the Cavaliers and now the Indians. Good stuff happening in professional sports here in the great Buckeye State. Logan, you had a comment or
and
question?
And I must say, WWGH has become a real star radio station. It's really a great station.
No
it
question.
Needs much more attention and publicity.
Yeah, it has been a pleasure being on so far. But, sir, actually, I have a question regarding assassinations. I'm sure in your research you may... Well, actually, my first question is, have you found common elements when there is an assassination, an attempted assassination, assassination threats? Are there common elements, whether with that president, that candidate, that society? Do you find common elements, and do those exist now with the current presidency, and would they exist whether Hillary was the president or Trump was the president? Do you find similarities through certain threads?
Well, there's a definite threat. Thank you, Logan. Definite threat or definite factor of mental illness. I mean, all the people who have tried to kill a president, those who have succeeded, those who have not, with maybe the exception of Lincoln's assassin, John Wilkes Booth, who's also the only famous person other than trying to kill or killing a president. He did not have mental illness, I did not think. He was a Confederate sympathizer. He hated Lincoln, but I don't think he was mentally ill.
It was ideological.
But all the other assassins or potential assassins, I think all have mental illness as a common theme, and I think that is always present. We have plenty of issues with that today, and I think even if Hillary Clinton was in the White House, she would face death threats as Donald Trump has faced. And I want to point out Barack Obama, at least publicly that we know of, has had more death threats than any president since Abraham Lincoln. I'm not sure as much for Trump, but there's been enough reported that indicates the Secret Service is very busy, and I'm sure they would be with Hillary Clinton because she's a controversial person as well, and a lot of people don't like a husband and all that, you know, who was president earlier. So, but I do think mental illness is the major reason for, these incidents happening. But also, of course, political differences, economic hard times for some of these people. Many of them are not successes in life. And I think in a couple cases, I think also just alienation from the country they live in, which is sort of like a general idea. But I think mental illness is number one.
Well, thank you, Ron. Great insight there. And again, presidential politics is such an interesting topic.
Oh, fascinating. I spent my whole life since I was 10 years old being interested in presidential history and American history.
I know personally I'm not a history buff, but I find myself more interested in it as I get older. But
you're very knowledgeable, though. I have to tell you, you really are.
Well, I think maybe you've imparted some of that knowledge to me. But with Watergate and Nixon, I remember, as I told you, my dad and I used to watch that religiously as that was occurring, and watching Agnew resign, and then I remember Nixon appointing Ford as the vice president, then resigning. So that I remember like it was almost yesterday, despite being over 40 years ago. So it kind of ingrains in your brain, I think, when something like that occurs as a major event in your lifetime.
Well, it was a constitutional crisis like we have right now. These kind of things don't come that often to that extent. But right now, I think we have it with Trump, and also with the danger of possibly three more wars being started very soon. I just hope it does not happen. But I am very worried about the issue of Iran, North Korea, and Venezuela all at once, and still having issues with the Middle East with ISIS, and, of course, the Syrian civil war, and, of course, Afghanistan.
Logan, you were born in 87.
Correct.
Would you agree with me that 9/11 is the biggest historical event to occur in your lifetime?
Yes. Yeah, actually, funny enough, my history teacher, a week before 9/11, had just gotten done telling us that he remembered exactly where he was when JFK was assassinated. He remembered the smell of the day, you know, with the weather out. He remembered all that. He'd just gotten done telling us that. And a week later, 9/11 happened. And I can... In the same way, I can tell you where I was, I can tell you the clothes I was wearing, the friends I talked to, the conversations I had. In my generation and people my age, that's the single defining moment. That's one of those moments where there's a before and after. So, yeah.
I agree with you, Logan. And, of course, I remember exactly where I was and what was going on when the Kennedy assassination occurred. I also remember with the Challenger space astronaut disaster in 1986 and, of course, 9/11. But the thing that's sad is now I have students who were born at the 18 that were born in 1999.
Yeah.
And they do, of course, they've heard about it, but they don't remember 9/11 because they're too young. Mm-hmm. And in the future, there'll be people born even after it happened, next 2 or 3 years. So there's always a need for students to learn these things or hear it from their parents, if not from teachers, mm-hmm. because this is something we can never forget.
It's surreal, Ron and Logan, that there are people driving around with a license, 16, who were not alive when 9/11 occurred.
It's actually one of the things that makes me feel older now, like I need a fake hip or get off my lawn. I'll just shout at random people that now. So,
yeah, you were 14.
Yeah, I was a freshman in high school.
I was always good at arithmetic.
Very good.
So
you got to remember one thing, Logan. You're 30 now. There's the old saying, you can't trust anyone over 30.
I'll keep that in mind.
So enjoy 30. You don't want to be 31 because then you can't be trusted.
Oh, no. I do have a question for both of you.
Sure, go right ahead. My brain is all ready for you.
No, it's fine. So you mentioned Watergate. Now, I'm living through this scandal with Trump and everything in office with the media coverage. Now, obviously, if this turns out to be collusion with a foreign entity, that will be the biggest scandal ever. But right now, with the coverage that's in place currently, is this bigger than Watergate while it was ongoing?
I think it's bigger than Watergate, yes, because I think Trump has no background to be president. I think he's more dangerous. Nixon definitely had qualifications. He had real positive points in his administration. He had a very, positive in some ways foreign policy as well. But he had his own demons, his own problems. And he was dangerous, I think, toward the end. There was some talk he might declare martial law. I am concerned that Trump might declare martial law if we had another 9/11 attack. And he might decide to unleash nuclear weapons on North Korea. And again, I'm not claiming Kim Jong-un is someone to be ignored, but I do not think nuclear attack is the answer. We've never done it since 1945, and we never should. So I think it's more dangerous, in my opinion, than the Watergate scandal. How about you, Adam?
I would say now with the higher technology we have in weaponry, it's kind of scary. I try not to think about it, but your skin starts to tingle a bit. You start reading these articles, and there's no question whatsoever.
Good question again, Logan. Thank you. In fact, you're a good interview. You should be on radio.
During Donald Trump's first address to the UN General Assembly, he said the United States has great strength and patience, but if it is forced to defend itself or its allies, we will have no choice but to totally destroy North Korea. It's time for North Korea to realize that its denuclearization is its only responsible future. Trump also warned that Kim Jong-un, whom he again referred to as Rocket Man, with apologies to Sir Elton John, of course, is on a suicide mission for himself. What's your take on that, Ron?
Well, I'm just hearing it from you. So he actually said in this speech, the Rocket Man?
Yeah.
That's
Rocket
ridiculous.
Man is
he
on a suicide mission
that makes
for
it
himself.
Sound crazy. It sounds like he's ready to use nuclear weapons to have total destruction. Does sound like that, but I don't know. I have to watch his body language. I'll see it after the show is over. But I think I'm curious how the audience, do they pan the audience to see how they reacted with their faces? Because I think that it sounds very scary and dangerous, and I think he's going beyond the pale in many respects. And I think this is the kind of thing that I think has to be prevented somehow. I don't know how, but I sense doom coming.
I'm very impressed that he used the word denuclearization. That's a nice long word. What do you think about that, Logan? That's a good word.
I mean, George W. Bush couldn't handle it all the time, so at least you can give him that.
He also offered...
I've jokingly said, George W., we need you.
Right? Doesn't that say something when you're pining for the George W. Bush days? Anyway.
I've joked with some people. Imagine 40 years from now, and we look back and we have whoever the president is then, and we say, oh my God, he or she's terrible. He's worse than Trump. I hope that's not the case.
I hope we never
say
that.
We always look somehow with sympathy and back on, oh, it wasn't so bad in the good old days, even though it was.
Yeah.
Trump also offers strong words for countries that trade and finance North Korea. He said, it's an outrage that some nations would not only trade with such a nation, but would arm, supply, and financially support a country that imperils the world. He suggested that he plans to scrap the Iran nuclear deal, saying it was a mistake to enter into the agreement at all. Trump said the Iran deal was one of the worst and most one-sided transactions. It's an embarrassment to the U.S., and I don't think you've heard the last of it, believe me. What do you think about that, Ron?
Well, first of all, I'm not an expert on the Iran deal, but I must remind everyone that it was a deal signed not just by President Obama, but by China, Russia, Great Britain, France, and Germany, and they have not expressed the same doubts about the agreement. And we get different viewpoints about whether Iran is breaking the deal. Actually, for what I've read, they are not breaking the deal. Now, it doesn't mean they won't in the future. My thought is, if they break the deal and it becomes a real problem in the future, we can deal with it then. But why should we break an agreement that, at least in many quarters, is seen as working and really provoke Iran? Are we ready to go in and indeed turn the primarily pro-American Iranian population against us? Are we going to invade a country much larger than Iraq, which would mean a massive land war that would never end? I just think it's suicidal to be thinking at this point of doing something until it is absolutely necessary. If it works out in the long run that Iran is breaking the deal, that's another story. But there is no indication of that. So I think it is reckless and irresponsible, and I hope it will not happen.
Yeah, no, I'm in agreement with that as well. I think the primary detractors with the Iran agreement were ideological, and that had to do with, before the agreement, we froze a whole lot of money that Iran had. We froze that money, and now, because of the agreement, we're giving a lot of that money back, right? A lot of Republicans were like, no, we're giving money to them. They spun it as, we're giving money to them, but that's not the case.
We're giving back money that was held since 1980
exactly.
In many cases.
And I don't believe Trump has the nuance to actually... He's just going with the primary talking points on that, and he's just running hog with it. I think it's a lack of understanding.
His ignorance. That's what it is. His ignorance stands out. And And all I know is, again, do we really want to commit troops and massive spending and another $1 trillion debt unnecessarily? If it's essential, okay, but I do not think at a time when we have the North Korea problem and we have the ISIS problem and the Afghanistan war still and possibly involvement in Venezuela, which is really crazy, I think, that we need to add another thing to the list.
Exactly. My main compunction with these possible wars that are going on is I don't feel they're for very effective, even for geopolitical reasons. You don't always have to agree, but I feel like these are more wag the dog scenarios than they are anything else. But that's just my opinion.
Well, I think he's trying to divert attention from what's going on internally. Meanwhile, mm-hmm. as far as the domestic legislation, look what he's trying to do to the Interior Department and to the National Parks and National Monuments. And my oldest son, David, works for the Conservation Lands Foundation in D.C., and they're fighting tooth and nail against any change of these national monuments that Obama and Bill Clinton declared. And it seems to a lot of people that a lot of it's just political payback by Trump because he hates Obama so much and despises Bill Clinton almost as much as certainly his wife Hillary Clinton. But, I mean, conservation and national parks and monuments should not be open to drilling, mining, and logging. I mean, it's outrageous.
You are listening to Mid-Morning Coffee Break with Adam on the phone with me, live from Florida, Dr. Ronald Fineman, presidential and historical scholar. Frequent guest on this show and with Scott Spears, good friend of the station, always interesting, erudite gentleman to have on the air. And in studio, Logan H., friend of mine and fellow computer geek, discussing the events and thoughts of the day. About 1 minute left to the show, gentlemen. Time always flies when you have fun, as my mama always said.
Yeah, I want to thank Logan for coming on this show. He added a lot to it, and I appreciated his questioning.
Thank you. I appreciate you answering my questions.
And I hope he can do it again.
Last but not least, Ron, on your blog, theprogressiveprofessor.com, yesterday, you talked about the 166th anniversary of the New York Times.
That's correct. And also Constitution Day was Sunday. I think I wrote about it on Saturday. It's 230 years since the signing of the Constitution. Yeah, a lot of historic moments right now. But the New York Times has the most Pulitzer Prizes of any newspaper, 122. And it's, of course, the paper of record with its index since 1851 when it opened and started to publish. And it doesn't always have perfection. It makes mistakes. But it's still the best newspaper in the United States and the highest circulation of any metropolitan daily newspaper.
We could all sing happy birthday, but I'll spare my listeners.
Well, it's anniversary, or birthday, whatever you want to call it, yes.
But thanks, Ron, for being on the show. We'll talk to you again soon. Have a great day there in beautiful Boca Raton, Florida. Linda's up next, and I'm back after noon with Now Without Scott Spears on WWGH.
Thanks again, Adam and Logan.
You're listening to WWGH Radio LLC.